Hello and welcome to the Eat PhD Team podcast, the podcast here to help you with your relationship with food and body by giving you evidence-based techniques to support yourself with a sprinkling of feminism, a dash of dismantling diet culture and a side of vulnerability as we share our own messy lives with you. I'm Emilia, a registered nutritionist and PhD with the sole purpose of making your life happier and healthier. If you love it, please do go wild and share it. And if you're ready for support with our coaching, details are in the show notes. Hello and welcome to episode number 304 of the ET PhD Team podcast with myself and Becca. Hi Becca, how are you?
I am very well, thank you. How are you?
Good. I am well, thank you. It's a beautiful day. I just love when it's a beautiful day. It just makes everything better, especially in the UK where you don't really get it, or I guess Ireland, you don't really get it all the time. So when you do get it, it's like the ultimate gift. So I'm great. How are you, Anna?
Also pretty great. You know, I mean, I'm having such a good day, but I'll roll with it.
Oh my gosh. I just made a homemade bubble tea, but I did something wrong and all the tapioca stuck to the bottom, and then all I was basically drinking was like chocolate flavoured coconut milk. So a bit sad about that. But other than that, doing quite well.
It was just a handful of blueberries in a protein shake.
No, it's tapioca like pearls, like bubble tea pearls. Oh, I do sometimes
real,
do that.
Real thing.
Yeah, my best friend got me them. The thing is, at the moment, I'm really, really craving licorice, but you can't have like tons of licorice when you're pregnant. You've something to be mindful of, specifically licorice root. And all I want is licorice, all sorts, like licorice. And tapioca tastes a little bit like it, so I'm like, that'll do. I've got licorice all sorts open in the cupboard and I allow myself like one a day, which is a food rule, but it's a healthful food rule. It's for my baby, so that's my alternative. It's not the same.
Am did I you pregnant? Like it before you're pregnant?
I didn't mind it, but I couldn't tell you last time I bought a bag of licorice all sorts, but recently I went, when I was shopping in a few weeks ago, I was like, I need to go to Holland Barrett. I need to buy one of those raspberry licorice sticks. And it was great. And then I'm just rationing it. So they'll be in my hospital bag when I give birth. I'll just be like, you're supposed to bring, encouraged to bring like high sugar food. I'll be like, oh, licorice. That'll be the thing. I imagine when it pops out, he pops out, I'll just be like, no more licorice for me. No more. But for now, it's all I can think about. Clearly, that's why it's on the podcast too. Great. Okay, let's get started on the questions. Becca, do you want to go first?
Sure thing. What are ways to help encourage you to sit down to eat, even if it's just in between snacks, and focus and remember to actually do it? Anything in mind?
Post it on your cupboard that says sit down. Like something really obvious that just says like a big sign that's like sit here, like something that's like will cause a bit of a pattern interrupt where you see obviously your same kitchen, your same fridge, all of these things like all the same all the time. So yes, I would just really be really basic with it and stick a sign up.
Yeah, a big luminous flashing. I think like there can be a period of time as well, just I know we don't love rules, but just I'm not going to eat when I'm standing up, like, and really just try implement that and ingrain it, and yeah, just break that cycle of walking and eating or standing and eating.
I think as well, just getting a bit cute, you know, when you can feel like a tickly hair.
Anna's like clawing at her body while she's talking, for reference.
But exploring, like, yes, it might be habit if you're always eating on the go, but exploring, is there a bit of resistance in, like, this feels like a waste of time because I need to be doing, or is it just like, I see this particularly with clients that live on their own, in that, like, why would I make the time for myself to sit down and enjoy a meal or a snack? And something that can be really helpful is like reframing how you think about those things. And in terms of like an act of self-care is actually sitting down to really enjoy whatever it is that I'm having.
Agree. Question.
I have noticed that my partner, who has done bodybuilding in the past, has regular patterns of restricting his intake and overeating at night after I go to sleep, and he has some specific food rules. I am not sure if I should mention anything about it to him. I don't want to embarrass him or make him think I am trying to control his eating behavior.
Why are we smirking? Why are you smirking?
I just think this is so tough because I mean, I've been in this exact situation. Like, that's why I'm kind of smiling because I just think, oh yeah, I remember that time. And I've been in versions of this situation, whether it be a bodybuilding boyfriend or a partner who's got what I would think would be slight disordered eating habits. And probably are based on the conversations we've had around them. So it's more just a relatability kind of, I feel that and I understand that. And I've probably also been on the other side of it and been the one who's struggling with restriction and overeating. So, fully relate. My knee jerk with this type of question in general is always it's not really your job to comment on what other people do. But that being said, it's hard, like you're coming out from a place of the fact, like place of care for him and love for him and support for him. You can, if you want to say something, I would take like a curious approach, be really mindful of judgment, and also be mindful of putting like your want for a healthful relationship with food onto him, in that he might not be in a place where he wants to change anything. He might not want a different relationship with food. He also might not, these disordered habits may not be as disordered for him as you believe that they are because the intention behind it might be different to what you perceive the intention behind it to be. So you could potentially, you are seeing things through your lens of just like disordered eating and experience and knowledge, which we all do personally as well. And so when we're coaching, we're very mindful of our taking our own lenses kind of off as much as we can to meet people where they're at. So you could take a curious approach and say, it's interesting that like you won't come out for brunch with me, but you'll come out for dinner with me. I would really love it if we could go out for breakfasts together and enjoy the day together without it having to be like before the gym or only at night times, like when it feels comfortable for you. I wonder if there's like potential to explore that in your own language, obviously. And just taking that curious approach is if you're going to go anyway, would probably be the way that I would go.
Agree.
Okay. Any natural ways to increase protein without the use of bars and powder?
Any natural ways? Natural ways, yeah. So like the use of powder and bars, I think that's what people would think of when they think of unnatural, but I guess they're all just food sources and different sources. So yeah, I wonder about, are you putting it into a box, like what's natural and what's not, and why? What, you just get curious about why you are doing that. But any protein sources out there, like maybe try different ones that you haven't already tried. Obviously there's the usuals like eggs, chicken, meat, fish, the non-meat protein sources, but I'm trying to like come up with natural ways and I'm struggling.
No,
Maybe like putting them together.
that's because they are natural ways. Like food is a natural
Yeah.
way. And so it's whey protein and protein powder, despite
I'm
what
trying to think of an
anybody says.
unnatural way and I'm like, am I missing something here?
I don't
What
know.
is it, like,
Maybe
why
injecting whey protein into your
is
arms or something.
it?
That would really be unnatural. But any, I think you mean any less processed ways. I imagine that's, I assume that's what she means, he means, or they mean. Yeah, just try, like Google high protein food sources. Beth has just given you quite a solid list there of protein food sources. If you're not vegetarian or vegan, if you're vegetarian or vegan, it gets a little bit harder. Vegetarian still relatively easy in terms of, well, soy's veggie and vegan, but eggs, dairy. If you're vegan, then you need to look at things like pulses, and soy. But again, I would question because there are so many meat alternatives as well. Like one of my staple protein sources, for example, is London McCartney sausages. Sometimes corn sausages are slightly lower in protein, although some of the corn sausages are higher in protein, but they don't taste as good. But then I question if you would feel that they are unnatural. But then that's something to get curious about because it's okay to have foods that are processed and being very mindful of demonizing processed foods, ultra processed foods for sure. We want to be mindful of our overall intake, and we would never encourage you to just eat, for every meal, ultra processed foods and solely that. But it does sound a little bit to me that there might be something to consider there in terms of your food neutrality around these foods. And also, I don't know about you guys. I think I've had whey protein, and it's not about me, right? It's not about like following what I do. But for reference, I think I've had whey protein at least once a day, if not twice a day, every day, apart from on holiday or whatever, for the last 10 years of my life, something like that, maybe more than that. Protein bars, when I became vegetarian, a lot more, and they're obviously more expensive, so we've got to be mindful of those. But whenever I see a protein bar on sale, I'm like, holla, that's for me. But same with protein bars, like most days, not most days, if I'm out and stuff like that. So I would just get curious about that.
Yeah, I'm the same. I got asked recently, do I supplement with protein? And I like stopped for a second. I was like, what supplement is that? Like it was, I couldn't think, but obviously it was protein powder. But I had just gone so far away from looking at it as a supplement because I just added without even thinking half the time to like oats or whatever. So yeah, maybe it's your perception of that being unnatural and then you're struggling to find, I don't know, whole sources or whatever it is. Because it can be hard, especially if you're not like a big meat eater or you don't like eggs or whatever it is. It can be hard if you're cutting out like quote unquote processed protein, whatever that is. My turn.
Yes.
I know it's been discussed before, but maybe how to establish boundaries without changing your own qualities or who you are.
On the last Thursday's podcast, Holly went through a nice boundary setting example. So highly recommend that if you haven't listened to last Thursday's podcast, you listen to that. I think these two things are quite, there's a false dichotomy here. Establishing boundaries without changing your own qualities or who you are. Why would establishing boundaries change who you are? If anything, establishing boundaries allow you to be more yourself because you're not pandering so much to other people's stuff. And so you can be more yourself and act in line with your values and what you need. And boundaries are just a fantastic way of being more yourself. So maybe a like a misunderstanding around what boundaries actually are. Because if you think about it, you're not asking anyone to change who they are or change who you are or anything like that. You're just saying, in order for this relationship to work or in order for us to both show up as our best selves, whatever it may be, in order for me to be true to myself, it's totally okay if you do this, but it's not okay if you consistently turn up late or whatever, right? Whatever your boundary may be, I'm being really oversimplifying it here. And making sure that you also have like an outcome to that. So it's not just like, okay, it's really important for me when you show up at my house and you're in my house that we don't actually talk about, I don't know, body size. That's my boundary for me. In my house, we don't talk about calories and we don't want to talk about body size. In fact, I did this with a partner when we first met, and he started talking about calories, and I was like, I don't talk about calories at the dinner table, like it's just a thing. It's just not how I like to think about food. And he was like, okay, fair enough. And that was it. That was a simple boundary, easy. But if he'd then continued to talk about calories at the dinner table, then I would say, I totally appreciate like that you track your macros, that's totally fine. But again, like I really don't feel comfortable talking about calories at the dinner table. If that's something that's really important to you, then maybe we shouldn't have our dinners together, which sounds a bit dramatic, but I wouldn't want to be with someone either who was talking about calories every time they ate their dinner. So it kind of works both ways, or it has multiple outcomes. So I don't really know what else to really add to that.
Yeah, I think this can come up sometimes with, the way it says without changing your own qualities or who you are. If, let's say, you're seeing boundaries as maybe saying no more, but you pride yourself on being like all things to everyone, and you're the one that everyone rings, or you're the one who's always like offering to do things at the cost of your own health or your own stuff. And I think that's where it can get a bit like, but am I not going to be the kind one anymore, or the really helpful one anymore? But actually, you can still be all of those things, but it doesn't have to be, being unkind or unhelpful to yourself. So maybe framing it as a way of, okay, how do I show up for myself first, and then see if it works for me. Obviously, we don't want to fall into the, I don't know, the rigid boundaries of like not being flexible with things at all. But just, yeah, it sounds like there might be a bit of a crossover there between what you actually think you should be doing and what it feels like to not do that anymore.
What is such a good point. Sorry, Anna, did I just cut you off?
Okay.
Lynn and I were talking about this. I don't know if we put it on the First Time Mother by Choice podcast or if it was before we recorded. So we insight, but we were speaking about this and I said, I'm so much more boundaried and I'm so much less I don't tolerate as much anymore. I'm very much like that's not right, or that's inappropriate, or I don't have the space for that. And I said to her, I am a bit worried that I'm actually changing into someone who's not very nice. But what I meant was, and what I didn't say was, I'm worried that people think that I'm turning into someone who's not very nice. She was obviously like, no, that's not at all. And after a good sleep, I can see that's not actually the case. But with this question, it's like, are you changing your own qualities, or are you worried about changing how people perceive you? And then again, it's like, what makes other people's perceptions of you more important than you being your true authentic self and supporting your needs?
I was just going to say, like, obviously, we see that there's a struggle with boundaries in, and this might be true for this person. I am kind of making a bit of an assumption here, but typically, clients are people pleasers, struggle with self-worth. And I think when you start setting boundaries, like, I'm going to completely ruin the saying, but like, assertiveness can feel like aggression. And that's what you're doing. You're being assertive. You're not changing your qualities. You're just doing something that feels different for you. And I think sometimes as well, like, boundaries are great and they have their place, but they can feel, when you're not used to setting them, they can feel quite hard. And maybe, again, I'm just reframing everything, aren't I, at the moment? But whether it's you kind of framing them in your head as, I don't have capacity for this. Like, this doesn't make me feel great, whatever that is. So I'm having this in place so that I can feel my best self, like Becca was saying.
Yeah. It's the conditioning. It's the selfish, that word with the negative connotation, I think stops so many people in the tracks. But when you do notice that feeling of, oh, I'm being selfish coming up, catch it in your hand. I am having that thought that I am selfish, or I am experiencing that feeling. And just because you're thinking it or you're feeling it doesn't mean it's true. Sometimes it's just old patterns showing up and rearing their heads. And the more you sort of push them away, or I suppose act in line what you actually want and not let them win, the less loud they're gonna be. And over time it just feels more natural for you to show up for yourself first and do what you need to do for you first. And like, question why it would be any other way. Like, if you're not gonna show up for yourself first, then I mean no one else is going to. So you might as well do it for yourself.
I agree. And if you haven't read Untamed, read Untamed. Or if you need a refresher, read it again.
And again and
Yeah. Anna.
again. I shared the stage with other instructors at the launch. So this is group exercise instructor, and all the women have bodies that I wish mine was closer to in appearance. During some teaching moments, I found myself hit with self-consciousness and shame over my body. I also felt massive revulsion seeing pictures of myself afterwards. I know I'm doing important work and I fully believe in trusting the process, and I feel that this process is the right one for me. How can I help myself in these moments when I just want to get to that point? I know that that point does not guarantee overall happiness. I don't have a goal weight or size, but I still want to live in a body I feel proud of, and that doesn't make me feel such unhappiness when I look in the mirror.
I
So the
think
thinking face from Amelia.
they hit the nail on the head though with I know that like having that body won't necessarily equal happiness, or it doesn't necessarily equal being happy and confident and comfortable in their body on that stage. So I wonder, is it a case of like I'm not sure where this person's at in their journey or in recovery or for improving their relationship with food and body image, but just be mindful of, oh, when I get to that size or when I get to that weight, then I will allow myself to be confident. Because the only reason you can't do that now is because you're not allowing yourself, really.
I agree. I think in those moments, I wonder, or in advance of these moments, you could consider what makes you a great instructor. Like, what do you love about great exercise instructors? I've never loved an exercise instructor back in the day when I went to classes. Never have I been to a class or a yoga class or anything based on the way that person looks ever. It's always like how smiley they are, if they make eye contact with me, if they hammer me too much, or if they don't push me enough, or if they don't know their left from their right, so then I get confused because I don't know my left from my right. And those are the things for me, if they have good music, like those are the things for me that make someone really great at that job. And I wonder if, in those situations again, because there'll be other situations like that probably where it's, maybe it's not a launch, but something else, where you're going into these environments where your body comparison might be a little bit higher, and think, okay, well, how do I want to show up? What for me, would I love as a person coming to these classes? Or if you're getting assessed or something like that, what do I need to do in order to show up my best for the assessment? As opposed to where your mind goes at the moment, which is totally understandable, is your body is the most important thing, and you're working towards out that, like moving towards, wait, moving away from that. This has happened so much this week where my words are just back to front, or I'm saying the wrong thing, and it's like on calls with people, I'm like, well, this is happening, this is funny, and I'm like, but on podcasts, I'm like, oh, this is being recorded and being put on a podcast, and my words are just getting jumbled, and I'm like, it can't happen already, it can't, I refuse. But yeah, like, you're moving away from the body being the most important thing, but it's understandable. And I also don't want to invalidate the fact that if you're in the fitness industry, there is a certain level of appearance evaluation that we all experience. And I'm not going to sit here and say your body doesn't matter at all as a fitness professional, because it's so invalidating, and it shouldn't matter. And you can certainly run a business and be a successful coach and really fight against this and be you and it not matter. You absolutely can. But in the generic personal trainer space, like, we know that they're like, it does matter for some people, and that's wrong. But and what's amazing is that you are learning all these tools and all these skills, and you can change that. You can change the narrative, because none of us really want to live in a world where our bodies are more important than other things. And they're not. When we look at good trainers, like I said, like, that's not what we think, and that's not what the types of people that you want to work with will think either. So just kind of planning ahead. And so I think it's a lot of the time, a lot of the stuff is about knowing what you offer. And I don't mean, what you can give to people and how nice you can be to people. I just mean like the energy you give off. There's certain people that I've met at events and stuff who I just think I would also have to just like to talk to you all day, every day. I think you're the funniest person or the kindest person, or you meet someone at an event and they just they talk to you and they look at you in the eyes and they really care about what you're saying. And I'm like, those are the people you remember at these types of things, not someone in a certain body. And these are even fitness events, right? So try and think more about that side of things. Okay, tips for staying on track with food, steps, exercise when studying and working. How to manage juggling it.
Plan it in. I do. If I'm having a busy week, that's what I'll do. I was talking about this with a client earlier this week because she was asking kind of how, like, is it a sensible idea to have that kind of plan in place to make sure she's keeping on top of everything? When do you know when it feels kind of too rigid? And I think with that sort of thing, it's always like checking in intent, and maybe it's time blocking in that time for yourself in amongst the study or whatever else. But maybe still allowing some flexibility. Like, it might be, I don't know what habits you're working through, but maybe rather than saying, like, I'm going to make sure I do my meditation first thing in the morning, then I've got time for my walk, and it's just, okay, look, this is my time. But allow it to be a bit more flexible and internally guided.
Yeah, the flexible is the key part, isn't it? Like not expecting it to be perfect or going into that headspace of, well, if I don't do it all perfectly and all tick all the boxes, then I'm not going to do any of it. So I think that like expectation is going to be what determines, you know, how helpful they are, or how healthy they are overall. So practice like having days where you do some maybe and not others, and accepting like that that's okay for now. If things are really demanding and you do have a lot on your plate, like something has to give sometimes, and like that goes for all of us. It's never always going to be 100% perfect. And if there's anyone listening who has it always perfect, please let me know and let me know how you do that, because
Well, I was just going to say we all have the 24 same 24 hours in the day, right? So if you cannot get it done, then you're just not trying hard enough, I think. I do think there's an element of like sometimes some there's a level of, now I exclude people with children in this. This is not because I'm pregnant. I've always kind of said I don't know that world yet, and I don't know what that level of busy looks like, right? But there is a lot to be said for people who are very busy, and I've seen a lot of this with clients who have a healthy relationship with food and exercise and movement and busy important jobs and families and etc. And because they're so busy, they have to be really intentional with scheduling things in, and they still adopt that flexible mindset of, okay, so an hour in the morning is my time before the kids get up, so I can either meditate and have a nice like mindful morning and do some yoga, or I can quickly go to the gym and get a, you know, 40 minute session in and come back, whatever it may be. So there is that flexibility, but there's also that accountability of, well, this is the time I have to do it. I don't, and we've all been in those situations, especially, you know, us as people who are self-employed, where when you have busy days with podcasts and calls and lots of things booked in, or you're doing additional courses, which we've all done at various points, it's like, oh my God, I can get so much done. And then you take that additional thing away, like the course or the calls, and then you've spent a whole day fanning around and you're like, what the hell have I done? And you're less busy and you become less productive sometimes. So be mindful of just being like, oh, well, I'm so busy that that just means I have to sack everything off. And I know that that person who asked this question is not saying that. But, you know, if there are people who are like, oh, it's just a busy week, so I'm just not going to do anything. Sometimes that's for sure valid. Like, it's, if you're working night shifts and have children, and not even like depend night shifts alone, like, geez, that obviously makes things difficult. But just don't assume that just because you're doing more, it's going to be harder. Sometimes it is actually easier.
do you ever have those days where you're like, this is going to be so full on, I have so much to do, and then you get them done and you're like, oh, I totally overestimated that.
Yeah.
What the hell is that all about?
Absolutely. I now I try and remind myself, because I get like, because of that, I get like that. And I'm like, oh, I've got six calls in a row before like lunch or whatever. So like I'm going to be switched on. And then I get to lunch and I'm like, okay, what's next? And then you're like, oh, that was great. I do think you can, I guess it depends on your job too, right? If you love what you do get a bit of like a thrive from it up to a certain point. And then you're like, okay, I need a break.
I'm always like, I'm gonna remind myself of this next time I'm stressed, because it's
Yeah,
any time as bad as it seems.
for
And I think
sure.
that has to be said for shortening tasks as well. Like, you can do, I don't know, half the amount of time that you were planning on doing in the gym, or go for half the amount of steps that you were planning on going. Like, there still seems to be this like universal idea, if it's not done properly, don't do it at all. Or if it's not 100%, then why bother trying? So yeah.
And
Anything, something is better than nothing.
I agree. Becca.
Okay. I might go a while without eating chocolate because I don't think I want it. And I'm not feeling that tension where I'm telling myself I can't have it, but then have an urge to eat loads as if I'm been depriving myself, or if, as if I've been consciously, that I've consciously banned chocolate. What's going on here?
I'm inclined, now we don't know specifically, especially I don't know who this person is, and I don't know your specific situation. I am inclined to think it's a little bit of just a natural reward response to foods that are high in sugar, fat, certain nutrients. Like, we do get a neurotransmitter response to foods that are higher in these nutrients. And then when we see these foods again, we're more likely to want them. It's these dopamine and forced sensory cues that we get. And that's completely natural. And I sometimes when you're working on your relationship with food, it begins with binge eating strategies and that restriction and food neutrality and comfort eating and emotional eating and all these things. And sometimes once you work through a lot of these things, it may well be just that natural physiological drive to eat something more of something delicious. And actually, whereas in the past it might have been, you might have wanted to, do some work around what's driving me to overeat and what am I avoiding, et cetera, all the things we will often talk about. It might actually be now that it's none of those things and it's basic physiological drive to eat more. And in those moments, you need to look more at behavioral changes, behavioral interventions of, okay, I've had some, of course I'm going to want more. Whenever I eat a cream egg at the moment, which is my other craving at the moment, I want to eat the box. I want to eat the box because they're delicious. They're so good, right? And they last me about 20 seconds. It doesn't matter how mindful I am. And I don't eat them all in one, but I want more. And so I'm like, okay, just have a hot drink, watch an episode of Grey's Anatomy. If you want more, it's usually bedtime, so I won't have another one. But it doesn't mean I don't want to eat a box of five. And I don't want to eat a box of five because I want to binge eat or because I'm suppressing my feelings or anything like that. It's because they are delicious. So I wonder if it's, I don't know. I don't know where you're at in your stage, but in your stage of, working on your relationship with food, but that would be maybe something to consider.
There was another part to the question.
Oh, go for it.
Do you think there's anything in the concept of eating as training? I've trained my body to lift heavy, so have adapted to that. Is it also possible as a concept, if you overeat, you train your body to get used to that, so that to some extent, changing eating habits is quite a practical matter of retraining. Quite a practical matter of retraining.
You do get used to, I do think that if I understand this right, like you do kind of get used to overeating. You let's take ghrelin as an example, hunger hormone. It responds often to how we eat regularly. So I will get a ghrelin spike in the morning, roughly when I get back from the gym, like the times I will normally eat if I haven't eaten yet, because it begins to align with when we eat. If you're someone, for example, who's restricted all day and binged at night for a long time, you're less likely potentially to see those fluctuations in ghrelin, which, for example, is one reason why we say when you're learning to overcome binge eating, you're not honoring hunger and fullness initially, because your hunger and fullness regulation is dysregulated. So in that sense, yes. And when we say eat regularly, that's you retraining yourself out of the habit of, for example, nighttime overeating. What do you guys think? Do you think of anything on that?
Do we think of
Do you think I'll
that?
ever?
I mean, it's not something that I've really thought of, but saying it as you have in that sense, like, yeah, because it, I think we, when I say this, like we get into the habit of overeating, like we'll eat, maybe we'll eat less in the day because you know that you're going to overeat. And in that sense, like you said, it is a case of retraining to eat in a way that supports your relationship with food.
I think also that association with like the difficult emotion and the difficult feeling, then overeating. So you can build that habit loop. And I suppose you could sort of say that's training in a way, like that's, you know, building that association, like it gets stronger over time. But I wonder, that's quite a fixed way of putting it though, isn't it? Like I've trained myself, now I can't untrain myself, when actually it's more of a an association or a natural instinct to do it, but it can be for sure changed.
Yeah, and even if you think of something like neuroplasticity, we can re quote, quote, rewire our brains in terms of new habit development and new ways of doing things, new behaviors, etc. But think of that word, neuroplasticity. You know, it's flexible and changeable.
How to trust your body more after HA recovery? I am always so worried I'm going to lose my period again now.
It's such a common one, isn't it? Like that feeling
I
of
was going
if
to say, we've got the HA wizard.
it is such a common one of like being fearful, and because you've probably been through so much and you had to do so much to get it back, it's only natural it's going to feel, oh, I don't want to end up back, you know, in the same situation again. So self-compassion first and foremost. To build trust though, like it does just take time, doesn't it? And I suppose getting to know your new way of living and your new way of exercising and your new way of eating, and yeah, that you might, well, if you are going to make changes along the way, like you're never going to be, it's never going to be concrete, your habits and exercise and nutrition. There's going to be ups and downs, and it's only by living through that and seeing, oh, nothing bad actually happens, or you know, maybe something does change. But that's why tracking your cycle and tracking your symptoms and, you know, having enough time to see what's normal for you is so important. And if there are changes and if stuff pops up unexpectedly or things that you don't necessarily want, you can respond to that. Like it's not catapulting you back to stage one and all your hard work's been undone. Because hopefully you're going to be more in tune with your body anyway, and you're going to be more, you know, practicing body appreciation and actually thinking about health as a whole rather than being an autopilot again, or just dismissing health again, or restricting again, or whatever it is. So you don't need to catastrophize it. If something was to happen, you could respond to that. Give yourself time.
Yeah, I feel like I've said this in different contexts about 10 times on this podcast, but it's that idea of you can't trust that it's nothing's ever going to go wrong, but you can trust that you'll be okay if it does. And it's kind of what you're saying of, you know, you c none of us can be 100% sure that our periods are going to be regular for the rest of our lives. Well, until we go through perimenopause, right? But we all trust that should that change, we'll adapt it and we'll, you know, we'll support ourselves to try and regulate those things. And you've got the tools to do that if you've moved through in HA recovery, which is amazing. Oh, I've clicked the wrong windows here. Okay. Any advice for distinguishing what you really want versus what you've been told to want, whether by society or others? This could be goals, values, or anything along those lines. The example I'm thinking of is with respect to diet culture and weight loss, but could apply to lots of other things too.
Distinguishing.
I mean, I always go to like gut feeling that But if it's something that you want, tune in. What's your body telling you? In terms of kind of that's certainly true for me for values and just general wants. But I think when it comes to kind of maybe diet culture, weight loss side of things, that's when you can get a bit more curious as to, okay, is this something that I want, or is this something that I've been led to believe I should want, and journal on it? Or I mean, let's
What,
say like,
like ask yourself, like on your journal, like, why do I want this? What do I expect the outcome to be of this? Is this something I've always wanted? What do I think is at the end of this journey? Who else might want this for me? What are the potential detriments of this thing? You know, what are the pros of this? What are the cons of this? Where might I have learnt this value, or you know, like interjected values, parents, etc. With its goals, how does this goal align with my values? I think sometimes you can see, even like if you're having conversations about it and stuff, you can see how it comes out in you. So example would be, there's something, a decision I made recently, which I know doesn't necessarily align with society's values and potentially the values of people that I really love and respect, but it was the right decision for me. And before I made the decision, I could feel myself having conversations with people and getting really defensive or really irritable or really just not pleasant in the way that I showed up having conversations about this. Defensiveness for me, the key one of like, oh, there's something that's not quite right there. And so when you think about these things or have talked to people about them, and for example, if it's weight loss, and I have this conversation with people regularly, people who don't have their period, people who are binge eating regularly, and I say, you know, I would suggest dieting is not the right thing right now. And they go, well, I know it's not really aligned with my values, but it's the right thing for me because of it. And sometimes I can feel sometimes a little bit of defensiveness in the conversation, and that's not shade to them. I understand it fully, but it can just show up in the way that you defend your choices sometimes, where you don't have to defend, you should never have to defend your choices to anyone. Like, they're your choices, you do whatever you want. But I think that kind of like aligns too with that gut instinct that you're talking about.
yeah. And a really simple question to ask yourself is like, if I was to not consider how other people would perceive this, would I still want to do this thing? Like, if there was no one else on the planet, that's probably a bit extreme. But you know, like if it was just me who was impacted by this and me who I was doing this solely for, nobody else, what decision would I make? And I think that can be really telling if it's for you or if it's for somebody else. And also another good one is thinking, when was the first time I thought about this? Or do I have a distinct memory of, you know, the first time this became important to me or came to my mind? And that can be a good way of figuring out, is this mine or has this been passed on to me? Or is this like a trauma response or a defense mechanism or a coping mechanism in
I
some
love
way?
that. I use this example sometimes. I put it in my Monday email before about like, if social media didn't exist, would I still want to do this? And I think this that happens a lot with like weekend plans and bodies and, you know, buying stuff that we don't need, fast fashion, all these things that we do ultimately because of social media. And I wonder if you just didn't have it, would how what your behaviors would be. And that's a superficial level of, you know, if no one else existed on the planet. But maybe it's an entry level point. Okay, fabulous questions. Thank you all so much. Thank you both so much.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. And as always, if you did, please do feel free to like, share, subscribe, and review. And if you would like to chat to me, then you can find details of my Instagram in the show notes.